update your prior knowledge with Robots, the podcast for news and views on robotics.
Hi, I'm Adam.
And I'm Sabine. Welcome to the 8th episode of Robots. In today's show, we talk to Claudio Mattiusi, who is a researcher at the Laboratory of Intelligent Systems here at the EPFL in Lausanne, Switzerland. He'll be communicating his passion for probabilistic robotics with a punch of history and a dart to the future.
After Claudio's interview, I'll talk about a contest that we've decided to stage this week for you, our listeners. Since this episode deals with uncertainty, we wanted to see just how much dirt a Roomba vacuum robot could pick up when placed in an unknown environment. Stay tuned to hear more about the contest and your chance to win. But first, as always, let's hear the latest robotics news from Christine.
Thanks, Adam. Massachusetts-based company iRobot, which you may remember from our previous news reports on their iRobot Negotiator and their Sea Glider underwater robots, has grabbed the headlines again. And this time, three times in rapid succession. First, because of its announcement to acquire Necton Research, a company based in North Carolina specialized in unmanned underwater robots. This acquisition further boosts iRobot's recent strategic move towards underwater robotics. Second, because of its announcement of two new models in its Roomba vacuum cleaner robot series, with one new robot aimed at pet owner special needs in cleaning hairy floors, and the other aimed at small business owners that may require to clean larger areas. Finally, third, and most importantly, iRobot hit the headlines because iRobot co-founder and CTO Rodney Brooks has decided to leave the company. Brooks will remain on the board of directors and will spearhead a new technical advisory board. New challenges are awaiting him. Together with Ken Zolot, a serial entrepreneur and the founder and director of MIT's Innovation Teams program, Brooks will launch his own new company, Heartland Robotics. For now, little is known about Heartland Robotics or its products. However, it is clear that the new company will target industrial robots and will aim at empowering the American workforce in, I quote, much the way the wheel put more power into the hands of manual workers. A gigantic robot spider, 50 feet high and weighing around 37 tons, has been sighted in Liverpool, UK. The spider, which marks Liverpool's European Capital of Culture celebration, was first spotted hanging off a building before it wandered off around the city. The gigantic piece of robot art was made from wood and steel by French theatrical engineers. It uses 50 hydraulic axes to move along, spewing water, wind, smoke, flames, and even snow in the process. That's it for this week's headlines. Discuss iRobot's latest news, the plans for the empowerment of the American workforce, and the gigantic Liverpool spider on www.robotspodcast.com/forum.
Thanks, Christine. With his latest book on bio-inspired artificial intelligence, written with Professor Dario Floriano, Claudio Mattiusi shows us that he is at the heart of evolutionary computation, neural networks, and machine learning. In this episode, we look in-depth into one of his passions, besides Italian cappuccino, probabilistic robotics. Hi, Claudio. Welcome to Robots.
Hi, Sabine.
Can you please introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. I'm currently senior researcher at the Laboratory of Intelligent Systems at EPFL Lausanne. And my research work has been focused recently on the development of better evolutionary methods for what we call analog network, which include neural networks and analog electronic circuits and biological networks such as genetic regulatory network and metabolic network. And our interest is in synthesizing and reverse engineering this kind of networks in an automated way using evolutionary approaches and developing new methods that are more compact in their description of the system and can be open-ended in a sense that you can complexify, you can simplify the system during evolution, and that are also more evolvable in a sense that you can produce more variety that can be selected that is a real good novelty in a sense.
You have a rather atypical career for research. Could you brief us on your background?
Yes, I have a background in electronics engineering, and then I started to do some research after graduation in the field of numerical methods, and especially in the discretization of the equation of electromagnetics. And I started by looking at the conventional approaches on how this can be done. And typically you have a partial differential equation and you use some mathematical technique to discretize it. But it turns out that you can do it much better if you consider the structure of the physical problem and you consider what is already discrete from the beginning, and you discretize directly this instead of going to the partial differential equation. And it turns out that it gives a much better solution and much better formulation without spurious, for example, solution, these kind of things, and much more insight also in what you are doing when you solve numerical your problem.
So basically you started in industry before coming to research.
Yes, exactly. It was an applied research because I was working in a small company. We were developing measurement systems for electromagnetic fields, and it's kind of niche market, and it was quite fun to build these systems. And so on the one hand, we needed to make these simulations to build our prototypes, and also to use some optimization methods in the design process. And at that point, I became a bit disappointed with the classical approaches to optimization, you know, like gradient descent and these kind of things. And so I discovered, so to speak, that there existed these evolutionary approaches, and I started to be interested in genetic algorithms in evolutionary approaches. And then this led me to pursue a PhD in evolutionary computation and then to switch to academia and research.
How do you think working in the industry and then in the academic area influenced your interests or the manner in which you approach a problem?
Well, you end up, I think, seeing what are the main issues. For me, it led to the discovery of something that I didn't appreciate while I was studying at the university, that is two main things. That on the one hand, the fact that you always work with uncertainty, and so engineering and scientific work deals with uncertainty, and you need powerful methods to deal with this uncertainty, so a kind of calculus of uncertainty, which is probability calculus, or what today is called Bayesian probability. And on the other hand, the fact that you need a kind of selection based on the consequences on what you do. That is, this is true when you do some design and then you correct it to improve it. But it's the basis of the evolutionary idea of Darwin's, and then of learning in robots, and also, for example, of feedback in control systems. So I think that these two things I discovered, so to speak, as a common theme that underlies all the work in science and in engineering.
So these two things you discovered, the evolutionary approach and maybe the probabilistic approach, how do you have an example of maybe how these two things could be useful?
Well, yes, I think that most people is quite familiar with the evolutionary approach in the sense that there is a lot of work on genetic algorithms and so on. What maybe is not so well known is that it's very important to have this good approach that takes into account uncertainty. And for example, I think that one topic that could be familiar to most of the audience of this podcast is neural networks, and the conventional approach of, for example, use of neural networks for regression, that is for function approximation, is to imagine that you have a function that you sample with noise, and then you want to guess at what this function is. And the conventional approach is that you just produce one function and say this is my guess. But if you look at it from the beginning as an uncertainty problem, you see that there is not a single solution, that typically the information that you have permits a lot of potential solutions. And so your first task is to try to set up conditions where you can obtain a best estimate of what the function, the original function was, but also the uncertainty with which you can, say, estimate this function. And this is very important, both from the, so to speak, philosophical point of view, because it clarifies a lot of things that are really obscure when you apply neural networks in a conventional way. For example, the problem of overfitting, where you are saying, well, you must reduce the error, but not too much, and that's something that sounds a bit strange. And also from the practical point of view, because once you want to use your neural network for prediction, then in the conventional way, you just obtain a value, and with a probabilistic approach, with a Bayesian approach, you obtain a value, but also an estimate of the uncertainty. So sometimes the network can tell you, well, this is my guess if you really want it, but in fact, I'm not very sure of it. So it becomes much more usable. And also it has all this philosophical component in it.
You've been interested in the probabilistic approach for quite some time now. Could you share your expertise on the history and background of this area?
Yes, this is something quite telling in terms of history of science, in the sense that this, what is now called the Bayesian approach, is something that was discovered already by Laplace 200 years ago, when he founded the modern probabilistic approach in mathematical terms. And he was a kind of mix of mathematician and engineer, so he appreciated the fact that most problems are not well posed, in a sense that you don't have enough information to give a deterministic answer, and so you must adopt a probabilistic approach. And so he formulated this in a very nice and clean way, using this idea of updating your state of information and thinking of probability as something that represents in part what you know about the world outside, but also your information about the world. And this is very important because you recognize that there is also a part that is linked to your information and not only something that is objective outside. And but unfortunately, this was kind of forgotten, or in any case, the followers of Laplace, his epigon, so to speak, rejected most of what Laplace did. And they said, no, this is not objective, and science must be objective. And so we cannot adopt this approach. And my feeling is that it's also a question of the complexity of what comes out of Laplace's approach, because in a sense, you can consider very difficult problems. It's quite easy to formulate it analytically, but then the solution tends to be very, very difficult. And Laplace was a very good applied mathematician, and the epigons not so much. And they didn't have a computer, so they couldn't solve this problem. So I think that part of the reason lies in this fact. And so in the end, there was this maybe 200 years or a bit less of eclipse, so to speak. And then now that we have the computers, it's quite easy to show that this Bayesian approach is much more powerful and gives much better results than the conventional approach. And on the other hand, you have this classical statistic that looks more as a kind of bag of tricks and doesn't have a coherence in itself. And for example, my experience is that while I was at school, I couldn't make sense of all this statistical stuff because it really looks a bit incoherent. And now, after seeing the Bayesian approach, I was really convinced that there is a way to perform this kind of uncertainty-based calculus in a coherent way.
I still have trouble understanding the difference between the statistical approach and the Bayesian approach.
Well, the Bayesian approach starts with the idea that there is your uncertainty, your information about the world that is relevant, in a sense that It's not just a question of uncertainty that is out there, that is an objective property of the world, but it's also part of your degree of information. So two people with the same amount of information would obtain the same kind of estimations, but you can imagine that there are two persons with different kinds of information, different amounts of information, and they will end up with different estimates. And this is, from the point of view of the Bayesian approach, is quite natural, and also, I think, from the real-world experience, is quite natural. Instead, the classical statistical approach tends to think that uncertainty is something that is out there. You must objectify it. And so it doesn't make sense to say that two different people will end up with different conclusions. So it's a bit different approach.
So concretely, how can you make this probabilistic approach apply to robotics?
Well, I think it has a lot of relevance for robotics, and not only for robotics, but also for cognitive science, in the sense that you can understand much better how we, or as human or other animals, reason and act. Because we are immersed in a world that is full of uncertainty, and so you must deal with this uncertainty both when you sense the world and when you act on the world, because you don't know what is out there, and your senses just give you some information, but that typically is not enough to determine a single hypothesis on what is out there. So you must mix it with some background information, some prior information, to assess what is out there. And then when you act, you are not sure of what will be the outcome of the action. So it's only a probabilistic thing that you know, in the sense that more or less you have an idea of what will be the outcome, but you're never sure. And so this means that typically you cannot expect an agent, be it a human being or a robot, to work in terms of conventional classical logics, but rather it's something that is based on this uncertainty-based calculus. And so it turns out that we are not, as someone says, bad logicians, but we are quite good at performing this uncertainty calculus, this probabilistic calculus. And for example, in the classical approach, when you say from A follows B, and then if A is true, then B is true, typically we never understand this in terms of logics when we must reason in the real world. But the from A follows B is something that we interpret as there is some probability that from A follows B, and this is also known with a certain uncertainty, so we have a certain confidence in the fact that this is true. And this changes completely the way you interpret this kind of statement. So you can see that the behavior of humans is quite consistent with this so-called Bayesian rationality, which is also the title of a book by Oxford and Chatter, which deals with these things and many other similar things. So it's very relevant for understanding how animals and humans act and take decisions, and also, of course, to build robots, because in the end, if you want, for example, to mimic or to obtain a kind of artificial intelligence, then which is similar to what we are able to do, then you must deal with this kind of thing. So I think it's very, very important to base the working of our robots on these kind of ideas.
So you figured out that there's a certain amount of uncertainty in your environment that you have to cope with. How does this help your robot, an autonomous robot, actually make decisions or act or proceed with actions based on this?
Yes, that's very interesting, in a sense that here comes the second part of the two topics that I was mentioning at the beginning, that is the fact that you must select your actions, and you also must select your perception, in the sense that you must put your attention on something and not on something else. And this is not something that can be obtained in terms of simply of probability. So this means that you cannot just build a probabilistic robot or a Bayesian robot and where everything is just probability. But to make choices, then you must have a kind of decision system that tells you how to focus your attention and what kind of actions you must perform. And this is not something that can come from just the probability, but you need what can be called a value system that takes into account what are your ultimate goals and performs actions that in some sense are related and foster this kind of ultimate goal. So this is where the selection by consequences comes in, or the evolutionary and the learning part, in a sense that you perform actions and then you learn according to the outcome that is in relation with this final goal that you have in mind, so with respect of your value system. And this is something that typically is built into ourselves by evolution, so we have a kind of basic value system, and then is updated, so to speak, by learning during lifetime. So you see that there is a mix of the probabilistic approach and this evolutionary approach or learning approach that makes the whole robot. So it's not just probability alone, it's a mix of the two.
So if you have all this uncertainty, doesn't your robot end up getting confused?
Well, yes, it's true that you almost always have some uncertainty. And the point is just that you must act under uncertainty. And there is a lot of evidence that humans and animals do exactly this, in a sense that you collect information until your degree of uncertainty goes below a certain threshold, and then you act. And the interesting thing is that this threshold is variable, in a sense that there can be some urgency in acting, and so in that case you can be satisfied with more uncertainty, and in other cases you can collect a lot of information, which is something that takes time and is expensive, and come up with less uncertainty, and so acting with less uncertainty. So there is this idea that there is a variable threshold, and for example, if you are Indiana Jones and there is this rock that rolls towards you, then the important thing is just to act fast, and you don't have time to collect information, so you will act with a lot of uncertainty. And in other cases, if you are at home, quiet, and you can think about the problem, then you can collect much more information and end up with less uncertainty. So there is this very close relationship where depending on the circumstances, you will be more or less uncertain, but typically always a bit uncertain on what to do, on what is out there and what is best course of action.
And where did this probabilistic approach stand with respect to other approaches to design robot controllers?
Well, it's quite interesting that you can reinterpret, so to speak, part of the history of robotics and artificial intelligence when you look at it from this, on the one hand, probabilistic point of view, and on the other hand, on this decision process that is based also on the uncertainty. Because, for example, the original artificial intelligence approach was, simplifying a bit, was based on the idea of collecting enough information so as to be certain about the state of the world, the state of the robot, and also about the outcome of the actions of the robot. So the idea was you make a perfect representation of the world, of the state of the world and of the robot itself, and then you take an action by just choosing in a list of rules, because you know which rule apply in a certain state. And the problem with this is that if you try to implement this in the real world, you end up with the robot taking a long time to take any decision. So it's very, very slow, because it takes forever just to accumulate this information and reduce the uncertainty. Or otherwise, you must simplify your environment. And for example, you make a very simple environment that has a uniform color, where you have as object just, say, cubes of a certain dimension. And so when you encounter an object, you are sure that it's a cube, because you have only this kind of objects there. And so this was the what Rodney Brooks experienced when he started to work in this field. And it was his main criticism, that it's not possible that we go on with this kind of approach where it takes forever in real world, or we must simplify and end up with non-realistic worlds. And so what he proposed is kind of, you know, cutting the Gordian knot and say, okay, we just sort of wire a robot so that it's forced to act, and it's the designer who must take into account what will be the environment where the robot will operate, and it produces the right wiring to act immediately in this world. And so you don't have a representation at all, and there is no longer a question of uncertainty of taking decisions. So you can see these two approaches, behavior-based robotics a la Brooks and the good old-fashioned artificial intelligence, as the two extremes. The old approach was to work in terms of no uncertainty, because you have collected enough information, and so you acted only when you had this certainty. And the behavior-based approach is the other extreme, where you don't even think in terms of representation, but you just hardwire, so to speak, the action to the sensing. And but of course there is a whole continuum in between, and I think that we are sort of realizing with this probabilistic approach and also with the value system idea that we can design systems that are in between these two extremes, and moreover they are not static in a certain point, but where this threshold can change, so that if you must act very rapidly, then you behave a la behavior-based a la Brooks. And if you have a lot of time and a certain special environment, then you can accumulate enough information and reduce your uncertainty, and then operate on rule-based systems. So that's I think, what the probabilistic approach and the evolutionary approach brings to the understanding of the history of robotics, for example.
Since when have people been interested in going back to this probabilistic approach?
Well, I must say that there have always been a minority of scientists that have appreciated the power of this approach. And but so that even in historical times, you can find applications and that are obviously take this approach. And there are some cases where you see people that is thinking in terms of this Bayesian approach, but having been educated in a classical statistical point of view, they kind of struggle to express their ideas. And for example, if you read Shannon's paper on the theory of communication, which founded the information theory, then you can realize that he kind of thinks in terms of subjective probability, but then he tries to express this in this objective or way, which makes for a strange reading. But now that we can appreciate with insight that there is this different way to look at probability, then you understand much better what he was trying to do. But there are other examples. For example, the mathematician John von Neumann was well aware that this is the right way to interpret probability. And for example, when he was talking about entropy, he always say that it was obviously something that is related also to your knowledge of your system. So it's not something that is a property of a physical system, but it's a mix of your information and the information and the system itself. And for example, I remember that when meeting some scientists that were working on a project for automatic translation, they told him that they were trying to work in terms of the entropy of the language and using it as some kind of process to make translation. And von Neumann told them that entropy is not a property of the system, but it's a mixed property and depends also on your information. And they were completely puzzled by this remark by von Neumann. But there are also other examples. For example, there was Max Born who pointed out that uncertainty is not something that is come to physics with quantum mechanics, but it's something that is was already there, and so that you can formulate classical physics taking into account your uncertainty, and you can make something where you have a probabilistic component already in the classical mechanics without waiting for the quantum. And right now you see there are a lot of papers appearing where there are few attempts to explain the problems, the epistemological problems in quantum mechanics, by basing the interpretation on this Bayesian concept, saying that in fact is something that is a mix, once again, of our information and how the world works, a mix of what philosophers call epistemic and ontic elements, so that if you try to attribute everything to the outside world, you end up with some paradoxes where the fact that you don't know something about the world is attributed to some impossibility, some uncertainty of the world itself, which makes for some strange result and so on. So it's kind of preliminary work, but it's quite interesting in a sense that there is really a kind of revolution going on in this sense. So we can say that we go back to these ideas by Laplace that started in the right way because he had real examples and the real application in mind. And for example, if there is a citation from a work by Laplace where he says something in modern jargon, you could say that if there is an intelligent being that is able to, that knows the laws of nature and is able to know with certainty the initial conditions, then, and if he also is able to integrate these equations given these initial conditions, he would know the whole future. And this is often cited as a proof that Laplace was a bit naive in the sense that he thought that the world is deterministic and you can make this kind of calculation. And then, you know, with chaos theory and quantum theory, everything changed and the naive view of Laplace was abandoned. But in fact, this citation comes from the introduction to the treatise on probability by Laplace, where he says, yes, if there was this kind of intelligent being, it could do this, but we as humans are limited, and so we always must deal with uncertainty, and this means that we cannot take this deterministic approach, but we must develop a calculus of uncertainty, which is exactly his probability calculus, and nowadays the Bayesian approach.
And where does probabilistic robotics stand today? What are the main challenges for the future?
Well, I would say both the probabilistic aspect and this value-based system for decisions, in the sense that, as I said before, in itself, the probabilistic approach doesn't solve the problem, so you cannot build a probabilistic robot. You must have something that takes into account the probabilistic estimation of the uncertainty and also of the decision based on a certain value system. And I think that we are quite advanced in terms of application of this probabilistic approach to the perception of the sensing, in a sense of processing the input data, the sensory data, and getting some kind of uncertainty labeled state of this perception of the world. But what is really a great challenge is a kind of integration of everything, integration of this probabilistic sensory processing, the probabilistic assessment of the outcome of your actions, which is not so developed, and especially the putting together of all this with this value system. And for example, I think that evolutionary approaches are quite promising in this sense, because it's something that we really don't know how to tackle otherwise. Instead, the evolution is able to build this value system by itself, so to speak, just by exposing your robot to the environment and giving the right kind of feedback. And this is something that we are pursuing in the lab as an application of these evolutionary techniques that we are developing. So where you put together evolution of neural networks that control robots, and evolution of learning mechanism, and also the evolution of the structure of the neural network, so that you can have the evolution of the value system and also of the so-called neuromodulation that implements these changes related to the consequences of the actions. So these, I think, are the main challenges are of integration of all these ideas to get a complete robot that can cope with uncertainty, but also cope with a certain value system.
you could integrate all these ideas within a robot, what would this robot do? What would it look like?
Well, I think that there have been a lot of attempts to apply this kind of concepts. And what you need to do is just to consider real-world tasks. And for example, what has been considered for the DARPA challenge, that is the fact of developing automatic vehicles that are able to drive, for example, in a desert or in an urban environment. This is something that is really challenging, and is something that goes on in the real world where you want to achieve a certain goal. So you can say that you have a certain value system, and you have the uncertainty that is related to your sensor and the errors, the imprecision of your sensors. So I think that any kind of task of this type is suitable for implementing and testing how far you have gone in this implementation and in understanding these different components that end up composing your robot.
Thanks, Claudio, for being here with us on Robots.
Thank you for having me here.
As I mentioned at the start of the show, we were wondering just how much dirt a Roomba vacuum could pick up. To find out, we set up a square arena full of multicolored dirt, and then we let loose a Roomba for 2.5 minutes and measured the percentage of dirt that it managed to pick up. Can you guess how well the robot did? We invite all our listeners to post their vote on the robot's forum as a percentage from 0 to 100. The closest guess will receive a free copy of Floriano and Mattiusi's newly released book, Bio-Inspired Artificial Intelligence, Theories, Methods, and Technologies. As a hint, we will post a picture of the arena before the Roomba attacked it to give you an idea of the challenge that we gave the Roomba. But be sure to vote quick, because the contest closes on Wednesday, September 24th, and the winner will be announced in next week's episode.
That's it for this episode of Robots. For more information on today's guest, visit our website at www.robotspodcast.com. Our next show will air in 2 weeks, but in the meantime, stay in touch through our forum for the latest news and hot topics in robotics.
And while you're on the forum, don't forget to take part in this week's contest.
Thanks for listening. Hope to see you in 2 weeks.
Update your prior knowledge with robots. The podcast for news and views on robotics.